This is the Gadget Grill on... This is the Gadget Grill. I can't hear myself over the grilling. Turn it down. Don't... That's up. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark in the chef's outfit and Gary Stark, my dad.
As the busboy.
Yeah, turning the heat up in the kitchen and making it difficult for me to speak, as always.
Welcome. I make it difficult for you to speak?
Well, just sometimes. Welcome to the Gadget Grill, the last Gadget Grill of the year, the fourth Gadget Grill of the year, the fourth Gadget Grill ever.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Good evening, everybody.
Good morning to those in England.
And America? What time is it in America?
Yeah, it's about that time in America.
Lunchtime.
Yep.
Howdy, everybody. Yes, it is Gadget Grill. It is the week between Christmas and New Year. In another few days, it will be next year. How have you been, Lee? What's been happening this week?
I got some presents. I had a visit from Sackboy Santa and from
the other bearded guy.
Yeah, no, well, he's a bearded plush toy with a zipper up his chest. You know,
a zipper up his chest. Thank you.
Chest, not somewhere else. And yeah, I got some presents. I hope a lot of other people got presents, gadgets, and games, and cameras, and toys, and stuff. Did you get any?
I got some presents. I got some nice presents. I got a nice speaker kit from you. And I got...
You got some deodorant from Mike.
I got some deodorant from your brother. Do you think he's trying to... And toothpaste, too. Do you think he's trying to tell me something?
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, we weren't able to get that octopus in here, but I think the octopus would have smelled a lot better than you do today. Jesus.
That's right. The octopus refused to come in the car.
Yeah.
So what's on the show today, Lee?
Today we're looking at the best of 2008.
It's going to be a very short show.
Yeah, not much to talk about today. Okay, we're done. Should we just go straight into Colin now?
Colin, where are you?
Yeah.
Colin, you're late.
We're talking the best of 2008 for gadgets and whatnot this year. There's a lot of cool pieces of technology that came out, despite what we're saying right now. We're also going to look at what's on the agenda for next year. So we're not really going to look at the game review this year. I think you're kind of probably over that. You don't really care.
Care about what?
All four listeners listening to this. Yeah, so we're going to basically look at the best of 2008 and what's to come. And we've got a bit of news coming up. And, yeah, that's basically it.
So what do we got first up today?
Well, first up we have news. But first up, before that, we have Fallout Boy with I Don't Care. It's the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark, which is me. And Gary Stark over there, which is...
Him.
You.
Hey, okay.
Cretin, you. And we've got some news coming up as soon as the volume gets turned down a bit. There we go. Last sort of year. End of year. Stop that. Stop it. You're doing it again.
I know.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know what I'm...
Yeah, okay.
I need a proper mouse on this. Touchpad is too sensitive.
I think you need a vacation.
How about I take tomorrow off?
Yeah, you know, you're not on the air tomorrow. That's good, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got some news now.
We have some news, and I might start the news today.
Greedy. Fine.
With a story about a Sydney man who had his mobile phone confiscated by police and was threatened with arrest after he filmed officers at work in an incident civil liberties advocates say is becoming a frighteningly common occurrence. As photographers, Lee, you and I both know the difficulty these days that people have or that we have in terms of actually getting out and taking photos. A lot of people mistakenly are of the opinion that it is illegal to take photos in public.
It depends. That's entirely dependent on where you... I mean, some public domain is something you don't want to take pictures of. There are rules, like on beaches, you don't get up close to people.
Well, you use common sense,
yeah.
But while you're in public, you are in public, and people do not have privacy when they're in public.
I think what concerns me about this story is that you're allowed to take photos and film of police officers. There's no harm being done. Just you're allowed to have regular people. They have no right to take his equipment. Likewise, they have no right to, I think it was in the story, format or delete his images.
Exactly. In the story, it says that he said he was threatened with arrest when he asked what they were doing, believing he was within his rights to photograph incidents occurring on a public street, which he was. He took out his BlackBerry, well, there's his problem, and started filming.
Well, if it was a BlackBerry storm, then he has a real problem.
Yeah. One of the officers noticed I'd filmed them and aggressively came towards me. Give me your device, they said, and he said, I'm terribly sorry, I would have apologised 1,000 times, and they said, you're not allowed to film us because there were other officers from different areas of the police.
From what I remember, that's completely incorrect. You are allowed to film officers. There's only one time, I think, where that rule was pushed over, and that was during APEC. That was the only time I could think of where that rule basically didn't apply.
Yeah, this particular story finishes by saying that the guy went to the police station to file a complaint and was assured the police involved would be spoken to. They're going to get whipped with a piece of spaghetti, no doubt.
Maybe they should be whipped with the BlackBerry itself.
Yeah. And all King's Cross officers would be told that citizens had the right to film them doing their job. Well, that's probably what the problem was. They probably were not doing their job.
I'm not going to make any comments, but I will say that you are allowed to film members of the police force, just like you're allowed to film anyone basically in a public domain setting. There are common sense rules. You don't get up close, you don't invade their privacy, you don't stalk. But yeah, there are some strange rules, and the police obviously were not doing their job on that one.
They were abusing their power.
I guess it's the problem where a lot of people in power seem to believe that just because you uphold the power means that you are in power. The two are completely separate.
Frost Nixon.
Before my time, but yeah, I'm sure everyone else who's listening knows what it is.
Yeah, we should go and see the movie.
Yeah, I've got a girlfriend. I'll go see with her when she comes back.
Okay.
Yeah.
What have you got?
I have Doctor Who news. Because
who?
Yeah, that Doctor, yeah.
Who's on first?
No, it's an ABC thing. ABC are normally ahead of the game for everything. They were the first, our ABC, our auntie, our Channel 2, yeah, they were among the first to podcast and vodcast. Podcast is audio. We like gadgetgirl.com.au has a podcast of a show every week. Vodcasting is a video cast. They were among the first to actually do that. They were also among the first to actually really get with the whole digital TV thing, having online broadband TV and having a digital channel. They're not really taking a page out of Channel 7 and 10's book with this one. They're going to fast-track the Doctor Who special that aired on Christmas Day in London. Now, normally,
okay, they're going to fast-track it, that's right?
What fast-tracking is, it's become a loose term that networks are using in Australia and in England, where they're basically getting the TV shows that normally run, a couple days, a couple weeks ago, or in Australia's case, several months and possibly a year ago, and airing them 2 days later. So in the case of, like, House, it airs on Channel 10 2 days after it aired in America, basically.
And they do this so that they can hopefully prevent people from
downloading
the episodes from wherever they download them from on the internet.
Exactly.
And basically, they're addressing the need that people have to watch the episodes in a timely fashion.
Yeah, Australia has the highest amount of TV downloaders per capita, and it's because of the way our networks treat us, basically, keeping us out of the loop.
Total disrespect.
Well, it's not disrespect. It's just...
Yes, it is.
Okay, fine. It's probably disrespect. Anyway, ABC have decided to fast-track the ABC, the Doctor Who special that aired on Christmas Day. Now, have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet, but fast-tracking it in suggests to me that it should be... they should be broadcasting it, what, today,
what,
no, tomorrow?
By the end of the year, you'd expect. No, they're broadcasting the Christmas special of Doctor Who on January 25th, which is a day before Australia Day. So that's not quite fast-tracking, and by that time, everyone's going to probably have downloaded it anyway.
It is fast-tracking in terms of ABC.
Well, yeah, it's not airing 6 months late, which is what normally is the case for Doctor Who fans, but yeah, that's...
Only 6 months late.
Yeah, well, they're getting a little bit better. It used to be like a year late. It's nowhere near as bad as Channel 9's Frasier attempts, but you know, it's at least...
Channel 9's Studio 60 and...
They can't be helped with Studio 60 because that show is now dead.
But it still took them 3 years to get it to air.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
Okay, angry customers have accused Optus of greedy behaviour, who'd have thunk it, after it cut off their access to cheap international mobile telephone calls on Christmas Eve. And in a professional note here, the company texted customers this week telling them they would no longer pay local mobile-to-mobile rates for services that use the internet to make overseas phone calls. Now, the background to this story is that there's a number of telcos that provide a local access number that allows you to call an international site, somebody overseas, at a very, very inexpensive rate. You just call a local number, and that number then gives you access to call your family in India, your friends in Egypt, your auntie in London, and your favourite political satirist in Los Angeles. What Optus have done is they've said that that local call is actually an international call. Well done, Optus.
You're loud now at the moment.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is an international call, according to Optus, even though you're calling a local number.
That's not very nice. On their termination. Especially around the Christmas season.
Oh,
I mean,
Scrooge lives.
Yeah, a lot of people are like that. Can I go on to mine?
Please do.
Are you suffering from Wii-itis? Is anyone out there suffering from Wii-itis? You might be.
I went just before we went on air.
Ew. Ew. Yeah. The Nintendo Wii is sending people to the doctor. In England, about 10 people are being hospitalized every week because of injuries sustained while playing with a Nintendo Wii. Now, Dad and I were talking about this on the way here, and you like how the Nintendo Wii has basically replaced the board game for the families.
Yes, this is something that I've noticed, and we are doing it in their advertising. Nintendo are doing this in their advertising, but the Wii, as normally when you think in terms of a games console and a games device, you think in terms of some white-skinned nerd in a black T-shirt.
Raising my hand right now. Raising my hand right now.
You're wearing a black T-shirt.
I am.
With thick glasses. You don't have the thick glasses, I'm sorry.
No, I don't have the pimples either.
And, you know, sort of they're curled up in their dark room and they're playing a game by themselves. The Wii has
changed. I did that last night, though.
Yeah. The Wii has changed all this, and a lot of games on the Wii are family-friendly, if I can use that sort of term. And the Wii is the it's really turned the corner in the way that electronic game consoles are being utilised and played. That, you know, you'll get a family sitting around there on a Wii in front of the TV set, and they'll play a game in the way that people of my vintage 20, 30 years ago would have.
You're a vintage. You speak like you're a wine.
I'm fine.
Ew.
I'm a fine one.
Can we stop with that? Yeah,
people sit around and play games against one another using their Wii console the way that we used to play Monopoly or Snakes and Ladders and those sorts of games.
Well, what's happening now is that people are being affected by what doctors in the UK are calling Wii-itis, which is basically...
I shudder at the thought.
Well, a lot of people aren't used to the whole getting into the game sort of thing. Like, the Wii is not a sit-down-and-play game system. There are a few games, Super Smash Bros., a lot of the Mario games are like that. But a lot of them are, you really get into it. Like, there was one I reviewed shortly before Christmas called Raving Rabbids TV Party. And you use, as an interesting idea, your ass to control a racing game. You know, steering with a butt cheek.
Steering with a...
Butt cheek. Yeah, from...
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm allowed to say that on the air, aren't I? I already did.
Too bad if you're not.
What's happening with Wii-itis is sufferers are getting... are needed to be treated with anti-inflammatories and cortisone injections because of how much exertion they're putting into this. You've got to remember, if you're playing a Wii, it's just a game. You don't have to put as much swing or push as you would normally do in the real sport or in the real game. You just play. You also don't let go of the Wii mode, because I've seen a few accidents occur.
I was just going to say that this is reminiscent of when the Wii first came out and people were doing their baseball or their 10-pin bowling games, and as they go through the motion of bowling, they then released the controller and it went through the screen.
It wasn't just the bowling, it was also the baseball. That one produced, yeah, the baseball produced more than the bowling. It was incredible.
It would, yes.
Yeah. So, that's my news. You got any more?
I've got one more story here. Skype, a VoIP service, the free VoIP service that is very, very good and very useful, but it's been spying on its Windows-based users since the middle of December by secretly accessing their system BIOS settings and recording the motherboard serial number. A blog entry made on Skype's website assures us it's no big deal. The snooper agent is the handiwork of a third-party program called EasyBit Software, which Skype uses to manage Skype plugins. Among other things, EasyBits offers DRM features. God help us with DRM.
Digital rights management, for those that not keeping... you know.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. That prevent the unauthorized use or distribution of plugins, and that's why Skype 3 has been nosing around in users' BIOS. Reading the serial number allows EasyBits to quickly identify the physical computer the software is running on. The problem I have with this, Skype is free software. Who gives a damn about bloody DRM when you got free? When you're giving away free software anyway? What's the point of it?
It's still, if it's rootkit enabled, then it allows them to read extra information off your computer.
It doesn't sound like it's a rootkit thing. Rootkit is very bad, people. Listener?
Yeah. Little one listener already knows what rootkit is. We'll go through that another time so people actually know. But it's basically a way of installing spyware on your computer that can do...
a lot of damage.
Yeah, a lot of damage. It's not Sony. You can thank Sony for that one.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm not sure I agree with your thing that being free software, it still shouldn't have digital rights management. There should be no form of spyware from freeware, regardless of it being Skype. I mean, Skype was one of the first programs to come out and say, we have no spyware. And this was coming from the company that produced Kazaa, which had a ton of spyware in it. So I'm not really sure if on the one hand, we should be surprised, but on the other hand, we should be saying that it's not a bad thing. It is a bad thing. Spyware is a bad thing, no matter where you are. The only people who don't really have to suffer for it are usually Mac and Linux users.
Yeah. It's taken me a long time to actually trust Skype because of their background going back through what they did with Kazaa.
I just put about $40 in the other week so I could speak to my girlfriend overseas, and I found it was one of the best services I'd used in a while, much better than the Freshtel stuff I'd been trying a few years ago.
Yeah.
We've got a song next. We're done with our news. You could finally stop listening to us for, what, the past 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, and what have we got?
We have, you know, I actually don't know.
What we have?
Oh, we have As Tall as Lions. It's a new song from their EP. It's called
Into the Flood.
This is the Gadget Grill with Lee and Gary over there controlling things. You can find us at www.gadgetgrill.com.au. And right now we're looking at the best of 2008. And what a strange year it's been. We can say it's the year of the netbook, the year of the touchscreen phone, the year of the camera with a lot of cool features and stuff in it.
Yes, we can. Or we could say it's none of those.
No, you'd be lying, though. I mean, if you said it was none of those, you'd either be living in a cave or just lying out of your backside.
Well, I live in a cave and I
tend
lie.
To, yeah.
So what have you got in? What have you got specifically?
Well, this was the year of the touchscreen phone, and is this the death of tactile feedback? Probably not, but the iPhone, the Samsung Omnia, stop scratching your face. It's not the death of tactile feedback to your face.
Oh,
yeah, it's
sorry.
The death of, like,
I was just trying it out.
This is going to become really big in the next year or two. Like, I really wonder whether phones are actually going to have buttons on them at all. I think it costs more to make the things with buttons on them.
Yes, it would.
And it's a pain to actually maintain them.
It's very easy to design the buttons in software as part of the UI and put them in as part of the screen. Of course, a touchscreen is more expensive as a device than an ordinary screen, but the offset of a touchscreen, you can waterproof your device more easily because you can actually seal the touchscreen around the edges where...
Not in the case of the BlackBerry Storm.
Well...
Yeah, the in-joke of the year for being one of the worst gadgets of the year. There are rumors of Microsoft new touchscreen phones on the horizon, a new Palm OS, once again, another Apple possible, which I doubt, to be honest, this close to the release of the iPhone 3G. But yeah, it has been a big year for touchscreen phones, and it's only going to get bigger. Like, they're just such a small amount of tactile phones that anyone really wants to play with anymore.
Right, what's next?
Next we've got video in an SLR. This is so weird. A single lens reflex camera, which normally doesn't do video, a digital camera of course, having the ability to record video.
It's a very cool feature. And does it spell the end of camcorders? Does it spell
No, it doesn't. But it will for a digital photographer in and of itself. It's going to mean that there are a lot more wedding photographers out there who become wedding videographers as well.
Heaven help us.
Oh, I know. It also means that those people who really want to get into, like we talked about on our first episode, who want to get into photography can also get into videography and proper filming. Because cameras like the Nikon D90, and which record at 720p, and the Canon 5D Mark II, which record at 1080p.
And is now available
for a
very... And making some Canon users very happy.
Yeah, and it's very expensive, but it's a fantastic camera from what I hear. I get my review copy, I think, the week I get back.
Good.
Video and an SLR, it's going to be huge. It's only going to get bigger. Companies like Red, who are producing some of the most high-end cameras, they're probably not going to target people like you and me who can't obviously afford $10,000 bodies or $5,000 bodies.
Or $25,000 bodies.
It's a little bit expensive, but we're going to see more of this. Like, there's a rumor with another Nikon body late next year that'll have that sort of technology in it as well. And the entire marketplace is going to explode.
Right.
We've also got the year of the netbook. This was a big year for netbooks. A netbook is a sort of like a mini laptop. It's what the sub notebook really should have been. We're actually got two in the studio right now, and they're both, one's actually running the music that you hear for this show, and the other one is for my research. And these netbooks are 7 to 10 inches in screen size. They have 4 to 6 hour batteries, and they're really easy, lightweight, 1 kilo.
One has got to consider one's needs when you go out and buy a laptop computer.
Especially when one speaks about themselves in third person by using the word one so frequently.
Yes. In considering your options, a lot of people don't need to have the super great, super ubiquitous, all singing, all dancing, Wonder notebook with everything on it. Unless you're doing high-end graphics and stuff like that, then a laptop that is quite some way down the food chain is going to be quite suitable for you. And that's where the netbooks come into vogue. They are small, they are light, they are portable. They will handle just about all of the functionality that you can throw at them, apart from high-end graphics and sound processing for recording. And they'll do that all without even raising,
batting an eyebrow, basically.
Or a shaped eyebrow.
Exactly, an internationally shaped one. It goes further than that, however, because a lot of the laptops people buy, which cost between $500 and $800, low-end laptops, are running Windows Vista and not running it well because their specs are not designed to really handle, Vista at all, because Vista is a pretty... badly
it's
developed.
It's a very demanding operating system.
Yeah, and the extra...
resource intensive.
All the extra specifications people are seeing, they're saying, oh, well, it's got 2 gig of RAM, it must be good. Oh, it's got a decent video card, it must be good. Well, they're there because Vista needs it, but it doesn't work brilliantly with it anyway. So in a lot of cases, these netbooks, which are smaller and lighter and less expensive in general, are better alternatives for people. So this year has become the biggest selling year for laptops because of the netbook.
Yep. Just going back to what you said about Vista, one of the problems there, of course, is that you don't really want to have the hardware there to run your operating system, which is what is happening in a lot of cases with Vista. Your operating system is there to provide you with services to do what you want to do, not what the computer needs to do.
Dad's having a little rant right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you should be doing, you should be getting a computer with an operating system that sits there in the background and lets you do the work that you want to do without getting in the way of it.
And netbooks come with either two operating systems, Linux, which is great and is usually less expensive, or and in these cases, because it's free, and you end up getting a netbook which costs you about $300 or $400, which is fantastic, or you get the Windows XP one.
I think I saw an ad on TV over the weekend for a netbook at one of the major stores for $299.
That would have been one of the older Asuses,
it would
I think.
Have been, yes, it
I've
was.
I've also seen the new Acers out for about $400. They're great, except for their mouse. Their mouse is just weird with a button on the left and right side, similar to the HP Mini Note 1, which just I had a talk to HP about that, and they wouldn't answer my comments about if they seriously think this mouse is a good system. No one likes this mouse. It's so awkward.
A mouse is squeaky.
The mouse is weird. A button on the left and a button on the right makes no sense.
Okay, what do you got next?
Yeah, Australia this year got to see the BMW Hydrogen 7. I spoke to BMW.
That's right, did an interview with the BMW guy.
It's really cool, this car. It's a hybrid engine that gets powered by both a fuel cell and a water vapor system. And as the car is running...
Smoke and mirrors.
Well, it's not a water vapor. It's a special hydrogen fuel. And as the car is running, it actually puts out a water. Like, if you left a glass by the exhaust pipe, if you left it there running for about a mile, you get a glass of water with lubricants in it because of the engine, of course. But we also got to see, we don't get to see it in this country, the Tesla Motors Tesla Roadster, which we're going to let you listen to it. It doesn't sound like a lot. It's a fast car that doesn't sound like a lot.
What's the motive power for this car?
Well, it's electric. This is an electric roadster that has a very large battery inside of it, which weighs the car down. An upcoming Top Gear episode on SBS next year will have it on it. And it's a very quiet car from the outside, from what I can tell, but loud on the inside. I've got a sound clip that I grabbed from Tesla's website today.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if you're on the outside of the car,
it'll just sound like a Prius. You know, it doesn't sound like anything.
It'll sneak up on you and run you over.
Yeah, but inside of it, you're lucky to hear yourself think.
Okay, this is what it sounds like from the outside.
From the outside. Doesn't really sound like anything, does it?
I'm hearing more road noise than car noise. Yeah. It's sounding like tire noise.
It doesn't really sound like a lot. So it's this, it's a car, it's an electric car, an electric sports car designed from the same body as a Lotus. And it actually beats a Lotus, but it has this problem. It requires 16-hour charges for the battery, but it goes for a while. Like, they're estimating around 200 miles or something before you need your charge. It's just when you need your charge, you have to, like, go away for a while because... But this is this great car. This is electric car technology at its finest. So, you know.
Excellent. We're going to play some music.
We are going to play some music, and coming up after it, we're going to look at the bit of what you have to look forward to next year. Right now we have, I think we got Robin McKell, don't we? This is Comes Love.
Jazz. It's not for everybody. It's better than that. Whether your taste is trad, blues, straight ahead, hard bop, bebop, New Orleans funk, or Afro-Cuban, we play it for you. Every weekday, 11 till 1. Here on Radio 2 RDJ FM 88.1, or on the internet, www.radio2rdj.com.
Check this out!
You've been working hard all morning and now it's time to relax for lunch. What better place than with your pals in the shed? And what better shed than the one right here on Tuesdays on 2RDJ between 1 and 3?
So please come and join Peter Worthington, that was him, and me, Gary Stark. We're your pals in the shed on 2RDJ FM 88.1.
And don't forget your lunch.
This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark, and right now we're going to take a look at. Oh, you faded it down again. I was gonna do it.
You're gonna do what?
The whole do. You faded it down.
I'm sorry.
One of these days you're gonna have to read my mind. We're gonna do the best of what?
I can't do that. It's been banned. Obscene publications.
Yeah. We're going to do what you have to look forward to next year, because believe it or not, there is...
No, we're not going to do that yet.
Oh, that's right, we're not. We're doing something we actually forgot to do last week. Last week, you might have heard, all four listeners, that we were originally going to talk about a useless gadget. We never got to.
No, how useless are you that you didn't get to the useless gadget?
We had a lot to talk about last week, that said. There was a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yes.
You know, whatever it was that we talked about, because I can't remember for the life of me. But yeah, what we forgot to talk about was our useless gadget, which I guess we're starting this week. Our useless gadget from last week, which we're starting this week, is the USB-powered tie fan.
Necktie.
The necktie, yeah.
With a fan.
It's a weird device. It's like a plastic... Yes. Yeah, it's like a plastic tie that you can clip on to your shirt, plug it into your computer for a USB socket, and a fan will activate. This little tiny small fan, as opposed to a tiny big, a tiny small fan on the little knot where the tie would actually be, so you can cool yourself down.
Which part of you does it cool down?
I think it cools your chin, you know, because your chin is so over likely to get sweat and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of these useless Japanese toys.
One of the really cool things about this, though, one of the really great features about this is that it doesn't actually have a battery in it. It only works. It needs to be plugged in to your computer in order for it to work.
I can just picture them at a trade show next year going, "We've got it! We've got one now that has a battery in it!" You can just be the one poor sod walking around Tokyo going, "Look how cool I am. I'm staying cool, and I look cool because I've got a fan in my tie.
But this fits in well with your netbook, because if you've got a netbook, you can carry your netbook around purely to power your USB tie.
You can't close it. If you were to close your netbook, like, you know, put it to sleep, your tie would stop working.
Well, yeah. That depends on your switch settings on your netbook.
What do you do in a really hot situation, like, I don't know, New Orleans?
Imagine you're riding your train on the way to work, and you've got this really cool tie with its tie fan on it, and it's not working on the train because the train's crowded and you haven't got your computer working and you can't plug it in.
I think it's kind of worse with this one, because what if you were sitting on the train trying to read the newspaper and the fan keeps making you change the page? Yeah. You're sitting there going, reading the news.
Or you're in the process of sorting some important papers out and it blows them all around.
You're like, why did I buy this when I could have bought something useful like a USB pencil sharpener?
This is absolutely a wonderful... Why didn't you buy me one of these for Christmas?
Because they're not available in this country. But you know what? I think I can get them from Brando, so I'll try and get them from there. Brando, the home of China's useless gadgets.
I think Peter and I need one of these for the shed.
You need to get a USB shed. Every time you open it up, it electrocutes you.
What did I see today? Oh, I was driving back from Warriewood and saw a thing on Eastern Valley Way. There was a place that had sheds for rent. Peter, if you're paying attention there, we need to go down and get one of these sheds to rent.
Maybe. I think I just heard him yell.
Peter,
he's out there.
I know he's out there. I just saw him. I just felt the room shake as he jumped up and down for joy over that news. What else have you? What do we got for next year?
Well, now we're going to talk about stuff for next year. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out next year. We're going to look at... Well, we're just going to tell you quickly about things like the Intel Classmate convertible laptop. This is a really cool device. Similar to the netbooks that we were talking about before, Intel have been working on this laptop idea, which is a tablet-based computer for kids. It comes from the one laptop per child idea that was put out last year, and you can actually order right
was that
now.
Was that the idea that Kevin Rudd had?
No, but it uses a similar concept, because if he ends up getting these convertible laptops, it means... It's a $200 or $300 tablet computer running similar technology to what most netbooks are running these days, and a copy of XP from the prototypes I've been seeing. And you'll be able to basically use a tablet computer, which is easier for kids to use.
Yep.
You know, no fussy keyboard. It's an on-screen one. Touchscreen interaction is going to be big next year as well, with things like Microsoft Surface coming out in abundance.
Well, tablets still remain prohibitively expensive because of the touchscreen interface. And this sounds like it's going to be a very interesting concept. If you can get the price of the tablet screen down and integrate it with a netbook computer, then that's got to be a winner.
Well, the price is already down because you can order kits for like your Asus E and your MSI Wind off of eBay at the moment for about $100. You can get solderless touchscreens for your netbooks.
Oh.
Which is kind of cool.
And what sort of dollars involved in those?
About $100 plus shipping, which is not a lot
for
a touchscreen.
That's not a lot for what that is, no.
Yeah, considering that HP are using technologies like one of their laptops actually uses a pressure-sensitive gas pen, whereas another one of their technologies uses a camera system. So this is cool. What else we've got coming out? 3D TV is going to make its way out next year. More than likely.
I'll believe that one when I see it.
It can't be filmed. I keep trying to tell my boss it can't be filmed. It's a technology that will try and make sports, especially sports and movies, more interactive, more immersive. So you're essentially part of the action more than when those DVDs said, become part of the action. So, you know.
Or become part of the inaction.
There's also Windows 7 next year, the replacement for Vista. So, you know, less...
The replacement for XP.
Less ranting from the guy opposite me. Creative have this weird one called the Z Stem Cell Computing idea. We don't know anything about it. All we know is that it's got a logo very similar to the Wii. It's got a name very similar to the Wii. And that it's Creative Labs, the people who made Sound Blaster and the Nomad MP3 players, doing stem cell computing. I don't know what it is.
I vote for a marketing name.
It probably is. Will the iPod lose its steam next year? I'm thinking it will.
Yes, and I believe Apple are actually saying that as well.
There's rumor of a Zune phone, which is the Microsoft Zune. Anyway, that's some of the stuff coming out next year. There's also
A Zune phone, a Microsoft Zune?
Yeah.
Will it be as successful as the Zune?
Well, the Zune never came out here. The Zune was actually pretty successful in America.
No, it wasn't.
It was for the people who had it. Yeah, they liked it.
When I was in America earlier this year, on the plane, every second person had an iPod. I did not notice one Zune.
Anyway, coming up next week, aside for... you'll get more of my dad's random ranting that no one actually listens to anyway.
Random.
Old guy in the street. Yeah, more of that. Plus more news.
Listen here, Shani.
And we're going to talk about open courseware, which is something not even he knows about. And the idea is that you can learn stuff like biology and psychology and aviation without going to uni, without paying expensive TAFE fees. You won't get a degree, but you'll learn stuff.
Learn brain surgery on the net.
I actually have a Harvard heart surgery book at home from OpenCourseWare. So that's what we're going to be talking about next year. Next year, yeah, exactly.
Next year and next week.
We're going to be starting the year off really well with an idea to help you learn stuff. So that's the Gadget Grill next week. God, we ran out of time so quickly, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Gee whiz.
We've got Christian Scott up next, who's a great jazz artist from New Orleans. One of my favorite tracks off this disc.
Yes, and before we play Christian Scott, I am going to say good night. I'm Gary Stark in the Gadget Grill.
I'm
and
also.
Sitting opposite me is the maitre d' in the Gadget Grill, Mr. Lee Stark. Lee?
This has been a great year, and it's been a great 4 shows. I look forward to doing more next year. I hope everyone has a safe and happy and not a too drunk New Year's Eve.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, everyone.